Hello, everyone, and welcome from here in the capital city of Austin, Texas. This is Capital Geek, a podcast dedicated to the founders and operators that create the products we love and turn them into fabulous companies with meaningful exits. Whether you're raising your first round of capital or racing toward an IPO, this is where we deep dive on the lessons learned from seasoned industry veterans, geeks of all types, the experts leading product and engineering teams, operations and finance, or sales and marketing, and we'll both learn from their mistakes and celebrate their successes while providing a roadmap for you to accelerate your own journey toward success. My name is Josh Stevens, CTO at Elsewhere Partners, and I am the Capital Geek. On this episode of Capital Geek, we geek out with best-selling author and creator of the product-led community, Wes Bush. Wes and I speak about our love for PLG, why product-led growth is having such a huge impact upon the SaaS market, and the best tools to use as you're scaling up using product-led growth. This is a super fun episode, and I really hope that you have as much fun listening to it as we did recording it. Let's get to it. Wes Bush, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Josh.
I'm super excited about this. In case there are people out there that don't know you, maybe you can start with just giving us a little bit of background about who you are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my background really is in B2B SaaS, and I came from the old world. I refer to as sales-led companies who are all about, you know, well, still growing an amazing SaaS business at the end of the day, but the way they do it is totally different. And so for my background, I really was like the hired gun for these B2B SaaS companies of figuring out like how to grow them as fast as possible. And traditionally, like you would just do that, you know, with the lead gen, get a bunch of people going through your white papers and download the content and you'd send those leads to sales. And I look back at that and I'm just like, that's how people buy products? Even I'm surprised by that when I was doing it. And then when I was at Vidyard, we finally launched this freemium product, which had like amazing success really quickly. And that kind of like tuned me to think about the way that we sell products is actually changing pretty quickly. And the way I thought about a product traditionally was like, it's something you sell, which is still true to this day. But it's also something much more than that. It's how you serve people. It's not just what you sell. And so that kind of has led me to my journey around product-led growth and really helping people understand that your product is a growth engine for your business. And so ever since that first premium product, I've been literally obsessed about this stuff and wrote the book on product-led growth since then and have helped thousands and thousands of people learn just what it takes to build a product-led business.
That's awesome. I think we could talk about how much we love product-led growth for the entire hour. I think my first exposure to it was in the late 90s. We were running a company doing consulting and network performance monitoring, and it was like an early stage SaaS offering. So it was managed server, but it was on-prem, and we managed it remotely. And just like you said, very sales-led, services-led, you know, very long sales process. And we launched SolarWinds, and we launched it by just giving away tools for several years before we even started selling anything. And a big win for us was that Cisco's Technical Assistance Center started giving out our free tools, which then led people to having a great amount of brand affinity. And it's just been a fabulous, you know, 20 plus years for me getting to know product-led. And, you know, now that we have a name for it, I mean, I've heard it called, you know, high velocity sales or high transaction velocity and so many other things. What are some of the other names that you've heard used to describe, you know, what most of us call product-led growth today?
Yeah, like bottoms up, self-serve, just free trial, freemium models as like a label. And I think there's still a lot of miscommunication around like what is product-led growth, because a lot of people think like, oh, you got a free trial, you're product-led. And yeah, like I've still seen sales-led companies have a free trial. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's super interesting. We talked a lot about value-led growth at Elsewhere Partners, but I think the reason I love product-led growth is as an engineer, right? If you think about the purity of building a software product to solve a problem, that a problem that you yourself have experienced and you're building a tool to make that easier, you know, really, if you think about it from a micro-business perspective, a software developer builds a product, nirvana is that people find the product, start using it for free, onboard themselves, start paying. Like, you ask yourselves as a developer, like, do I really need sales? Do I really need marketing? Like, at what point do I have to hire those people? And to me, it's just a very authentic way to build and sell software.
Yeah, definitely. Because it is like a decision, like, do you need sales? If you're selling like a $10 product a month kind of thing. But it's like, if it's just that for the entire company, maybe not. But if it's like $10 per user, like Slack, it's like totally, like you can just break into some of those big accounts and provide a ton of value for sales.
What do you think are some of the top misconceptions that people have about product-led growth?
Yeah, well, we touched on like the big one here, which is just sales. And because like you pointed it out, like the nirvana is you have a product that can sell itself. And that's like the nirvana. Like that's what a lot of us want. And we hope to get there one day. But it's also like, well, okay, if the product sells itself, do we even need sales? And so for some companies, like I was alluding to earlier, like if your ACV is super low, like it probably doesn't make sense. Like I don't see Netflix having a sales team and calling up everyone's sisters and brothers and be like, upgrade your sister. Like this, no, it just wouldn't work. It wouldn't be ethical either. So there's like many cases it just doesn't make sense. But then if you're talking about like B2B SaaS and really maximizing your leverage within each of those accounts, it's beautiful because you can already see like how many people, how many departments are using this product already and who is most likely to be like the champion of this internally and really get us, if it's like Slack, expand to the rest of the teams and everything else. So there's a huge potential for it, but it's also one of those things that I think sales folks are resistant on because they don't quite understand how it all fits into what they're currently doing.
Yeah, I could see that too. You know, I got my first experiences with product-led growth with on-prem products. And so, you know, we were trying to send data back and make it act sort of SaaS-y, but the movement to SaaS has been a giant leap forward in terms of the analytics and the data you get back and how you actually facilitate the product-led growth. I always tell portfolio companies when I'm advising them that not to think of it as a binary thing. And to me, it's a lot like, you know, moving to an agile development methodology from waterfall. Like nobody's pure agile, everybody is some sort of a hybrid. And I feel like with PLG, it's a similar thing. Like there's a nirvana where everything is pure PLG, and maybe that's a good way to think about a baseline. But, you know, we all have things about our business that cause us to find ways to shim the process to make it smoother and faster.
Yeah, and I think you're totally right. Like, I don't think this would have stuck like it has in the market. If it was something completely new, completely revolutionary, there's always like, it's that one step above what we're currently doing. Like even today, like I was talking with the group around like market qualified leads versus product qualified leads. I'm like, take everything you're doing with market qualified lead, but just like start looking at the product data now and make it better and more useful for other teams. So it's more of a evolution, not a revolution, as far as how this product-led growth movement is and how it's really taking hold in SaaS.
I love that quote, you know, more of an evolution, not a revolution. I think that's a great way of looking at it. Where are you from?
Hamilton, Canada.
Hamilton, Canada. And you're still in Canada today, right?
Yeah. Enjoying the snow.
I bet. Well, we had a little bit of snow here in Austin last week to enjoy, but I don't think many of us enjoyed it very much.
No, it sounded crazy from the sounds of it on all the news outlets.
Yeah, it was really an insane week. You know, Wes, when you think about product-led growth and just sort of what excites you, like what's driving you right now? What motivates this passion that you have around this subject?
Yeah, I think what got me into it was definitely the curiosity around product-led growth. Because I had been doing it like you well before it was defined as like, oh, this is product-led growth? Interesting. That's kind of what I was doing already. So for me, it kind of started with that gap between someone signs up on the website to like what happens to them in the product. There was a lot of questions initially. So I started digging there and finding out there's like this huge gap between people signing up and people actually getting value. So I was like, let's focus there and really dig into it. And so at the moment, that was like, okay, that's what I thought product-led growth was. It was just more like top of funnel kind of activity. But then as I started researching it more, I got excited because I was like, oh my goodness, there's every team really has to think differently. Your marketing team could use the product much, much more effectively to help hit their goals. Your sales team, if they even started looking at this product data, how much more informed and how much better would they be at their job? Same thing for support and success. And so what kind of got me and sustained me here is just this fascination with like how far could it go as far as building this go-to-market strategy. And when I think of like a sales-led go-to-market playbook, it's well-defined. So like everyone knows like there's SDRs, and there's BDRs, there's AEs. They all pass the deals over to the AE and from there they take it. And so like with product-led, I think it's still being defined, and that's what's really cool to see. And I think the next 5 years, hopefully, are gonna help create what that playbook is for everyone.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I love that you're helping create playbooks. We're doing some playbooks as well on my end. You know, both at Elsewhere Partners and with my company, Scale Engine. It's really fascinating to me because there are now a lot of products on the market that can help you along that product-led growth journey. I mean, tools like Heap and some of those, they didn't exist, you know, 10 years ago. And so the data that you were trying to get from the product was a huge mountain to climb in order to get that analytics.
Totally. And I'd still argue like there's still huge gaps in the tooling of product-led businesses, because you think of like a sales-like company, what you typically have at the core is like a CRM with the deal flow. And it's like, for if you're still doing enterprise for a lot of product-led companies, it's like, great, you would still need that. But there's a lot of data outside of that that you do need to either pipe in somewhere or have like a central view of like, what is this user doing and what are they doing within that account? Because it's not just like a lot of analytics tools I know of are more just tracking the user versus the account.
Yeah, really great point. Okay, so if I were running a company out there and I called you and I needed some advice, I'm thinking, you know, this PLG thing sounds super interesting. I'd like to dip a toe in the water. What advice would you give to someone who was just getting started with that movement?
Yeah, so what kind of business would they have going into it? Is it like no business or?
No, assume it's an existing SaaS business. They've got a sales-led or a services-led business. And now they're thinking, okay, let's add velocity. Let's be more product-led. Let's start moving that direction. Where would you tell them to start?
Yeah, so the first part is the vision for sure. He's like, you're not going to get on this journey alone within that company. I've seen other folks try this. And I've been one of those people at one point too, where it's just one person. And it's really hard because you need to get the leadership on board. You need to get your team on board. And so just getting people to think about two different areas. And I actually like tried to make it easier for people to like figure out what are the two main reasons why you want to go down this path in like a free certificate I recently put together. But there's basically these two things going on. The first one's like, okay, what are the trends that are contributing to this rising popularity of product-led growth? And a lot of them, when you look at it, it's like they're not specific to product-led growth. They've just always been a part of SaaS, like the lower customer willingness to pay for software. Like that's always been the case for technology. It's always been there. If anything though, it's accelerating, especially with COVID. And then you look at the rising customer acquisition costs. That's really just because it's become so much easier to create software these days that there's so much more companies competing for the same customer. And so there's a lot of these things contributing to it where it's like, if you don't change anything, these costs are going to go up, your profitability goes down. What are you doing as a business? And then on top of that, it's like, well, people actually, when they're polled, they would rather try before they buy than just purchase it up front, like anyone would. And we've seen it in so many other industries like cologne, perfume. It's like, you do want to try it before you buy it. And same thing with cars, like test drive. So I think it's really just back to that evolution. Like this is the way we're headed. Either you're going to like figure it out and smarten up and like decide, okay, we need to have some sort of PLG component. Maybe it is still being hybrid, like you mentioned earlier as well. But then there's the other side, which is the pull. Like what's motivating you to go down this direction? I think there's some fascinating reasons why like even big companies like HubSpot decided like, let's actually cannibalize ourselves a bit and go down this path because long-term it's gonna be successful. And so a big one is like, you can just have much better customer acquisition costs there was a company in Saskatoon, Canada, actually. Their customer acquisition costs before, like when they were a sales-led company, were $13,000 per customer. When they were product-led, 2 years later, it's $3,000. And wow. So it's just like night and day difference from a customer acquisition perspective. And it's like, as for that company or that CEO or that founding team, like what would you do with $10,000 per customer? Could you invest three in product, R&D, make that product even better? Can you invest more in like helping these customers become successful? It just creates this like repeatable competitive advantage where you can overinvest in your product. And that's honestly, when you look at like the public product-led SaaS companies, they are putting that extra savings into their product to create that moat for their business long-term. And so those are some of the big things I would start considering if you are early on in this journey. Just start taste testing, like what is this vision for us? Why do we want to go down this? And try and get as many people on board with this as possible. And then the second step is really just try and find like what is that first quick win, first thing you could do to get moving, get that momentum, because like anything in business, it's all about momentum.
You know, I love your answer there. A big part of what I'm about is being an advocate for technical people, you know, the whole tech community. So many of the people I've worked with over the years, you know, I've grown up sort of in tech. It's a great career field. And what I love about PLG is the purity of the best product should win. And, you know, we've sort of democratized the acquisition of technology. And the idea that an executive would choose a technology platform for their team members to use without that team having a word to say about it, always felt foreign to me. And so what I love about PLG is it's user driven. The people who are in that company that are actually doing the job and should have, you know, a lot to say about what tools they use, they go out, they find the tool, they start using it, they love it, they get budget approval, and they go forward. And I love your analogy about, you know, being similar to test driving cars. At SolarWinds, when we were building Orion, I used to always tell customers, I'd say, listen, I want you to test drive three. When I go buy a car, my personal rules, I'm going to test drive three before I buy one, even if I think I know what I want. And I'd say, I want you to test drive our product and two others. And if you like theirs better, then that's what you should buy. But I'm confident enough in what we've built that I think you'll like what we've built better. And investing that money to make the product better makes everyone's jobs easier, whether you're in sales or marketing or engineering. It is to me just a much more natural and authentic way to run a software company.
Yeah, and like the secret of PLG success, I always tell people, it's like your user success will eventually become your success. And
absolutely.
I think like most product-led companies, how they like operationalize that is a product qualified lead metric or something where they're monitoring like how many people or users that are signing up here are actually getting value from the product and how many teams could be really tracked by their success based on that. Like the marketing team, like how many PQLs came out of like all those signups and campaigns you created? Same thing for sales. How many PQLs did you close? Same thing for support. And really just trying to look at that metric as a defining factor for that company. It really aligns everyone's interests together for sure.
When it comes to missteps in a product-led growth initiative, what are some of the common mistakes you've seen people make?
Not understand the customer is probably the biggest one. And I'll tell you an example of that too. So whenever you think of like, all right, we're going to go from sales-led or product-led, one of the steps you're probably thinking is like, okay, you need to have some sort of free offering. People can get value easily. But what I see a lot is like some people might even go down that far and then they don't even understand like what is the main job to be done that someone needs to do in this product. They think, all right, if we show people the product, that will sell them. And we just will go through the product. Maybe it's a product tour of like a makeshift demo of what this looks like. But in reality, it's really just about how can we get this person to experience the core value of the product? And when they do that, the chances of them becoming a paying customer, and not just any customer, but a happy paying customer, skyrockets because they understand the value. That you just de-risk them and they understand, okay, this product can actually deliver. Because nowadays, It's so easy to whip up a website, create some copy, and say, you know what? We're going to promise you above and beyond, and just sign here and pay for our product. It's like, no, this is risky. We've all been told if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And in SaaS, I think a lot of marketers lean too much on the far side of that and overpromise and underdeliver. And being product-led really just makes sure that, like, you do have to be honest and really create an experience where hopefully you can over-deliver, but at the end of the day, you want to make your users figure that out on their own.
You know, it's interesting. I love what you said there. And so many people in sales and marketing get intimidated by a product-led growth initiative. And I hope that, you know, if you're in those career fields and listening, you know, if you think back to your last few jobs, it's really difficult to run sales and marketing with a product that users don't like. Like, if you don't have a great product, it's so much harder. And I think that the key here is that when you have a great product that people like to use and you apply the right sales and marketing investments to it, you add velocity and you just go really fast, which is what we're all after.
Yeah, definitely.
What are your thoughts about companies that don't think they're a fit for PLG? You know, traditional enterprise software companies that have just said, you know, that's not for us. What would you tell somebody like that?
Yeah, so there's always going to be companies that are not a fit for product-led growth. And I'll give you an example of like what that might look like. So there's, when you think of like your main growth strategies, you could decide, okay, we want to be the dominant player. That's a good option. Hard to pull off because you really have to be like the best product, best price, and really over deliver for what you're doing. And then there's like, okay, if we could be the disruptive product, that's probably even harder when you think of like Canva versus Photoshop. Like, hey, maybe it doesn't do everything, but it's like, it's so much cheaper. And same thing with Google Docs versus Microsoft Word. It's like, it's really hard to do that. And sometimes you got to have a different business model or some other main core product where you just give this other one for free as part of getting more users into your ecosystem. So like, those are the two plays. But then if you're a differentiated play, then it gets kind of interesting because you might think to yourself, well, hey, if we go on this like elephant hunting train, we can get some really big enterprise clients, but they might need a few different modifications for our product to really suit their needs. Now those enterprises, they're excited to pay you actually because you're solving their unique problem that a lot of these other one size fits all dominant players just don't have the time for them. So you can make a great business in that area, but you need to understand what game are you playing? And when I see a lot of people make these mistakes, they just don't understand what game they're playing.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. You know, I love it when I find companies to invest in or work with that are founded by people that really understand the problem the product solves, like they lived the role of their user or their customer at some previous time. And they're building a product that, like you said, may be a disruptor, may be cheaper and easier to use. And that can be the only disruption you really need, right? If you can be cheaper and easier to use, I mean, I love Slack. I use it every single day with all of my portfolio companies. But really, what does it do, right? I mean, it does instant message and screen sharing. It does things that I could have already done in ICQ or HipChat or WebEx, but it does it in an easy to use, very comfortable, collaborative way. And, you know, people are super passionate about it. I'm one of them, a super fan.
Yeah, but like, even on that note too, like as far as Slack, like we could have recorded this in Slack, but it's like, there's certain limiting features. And if you like, okay, for Squadcast, they're going to differentiate play of like, okay, it's just the podcasting market. That can still be a massive market where you still need a product-led motion. So it's really just thinking about in your space, like how big is it and how much of it do you really think you could realistically bite into? And that might help you define like what is that go-to-market strategy that will work best for you.
I love the idea that in the future, what we'll have are many, many, many more small to medium-sized tech companies that run great products like a Squadcast or a Slack, and less giant technology companies that, you know, that own a super space that's hard to break into. I often say that I spent the first part of my career helping to create a lot of billionaires, and now I want to create thousands of millionaires. I want to see every technologist out there find a way to understand how to grow a product, how to build a product-led growth momentum. And I think it's just something that we should be teaching in colleges, you know, as we're thinking about how tech can change the world, because these principles apply not just to IT tools, but to technology tools of all types.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you think about PLG and the benefits that it brings to the product in terms of how it, how the sales motion or go-to-market motion helps to improve the product itself over time, maybe we could spend a minute talking about that.
Yeah, and so I think the biggest thing where you're going to see a lot of companies investing in is just user experience. And it sounds pretty simple, but when you start improving that and really creating that faster time to value, there is a lot of other interesting benefits outside of the product that you start to take advantage of. Think about it from even like a support perspective. I know like the CEO of Atlassian, like he really treats a lot of these support requests as bugs. Like, hey, they're requesting the same thing. Like something's wrong here. Why are they doing this? And so you start to look at it from that perspective and saying like, hey, like why do people need to talk to other people regarding using our product? And it's like, it sounds like, oh, they don't care, but actually they do, because why would you need to like reach out if you're actually enjoying using the product and getting a ton of value? So like from a support perspective, I truly believe like a lot of product guide companies, that's one of the things that like they're usually not prepared for whenever they make this transition. Let's say they open up freemium, they're like, holy cow, there's a ton of support requests today. How are you going to sort through all this? And so you really do have to be proactive about like triaging and finding, okay, where are the majority of these coming from and what problem could we solve, and be proactive about how you build your design, how you help your users become successful, because that ultimately is going to create a less bug-free, easier time to value product, which has tons of benefits for the product itself.
Do you have a favorite list of tools that you recommend or that you see your PLG companies using that you'd like to share?
So like the PLG kind of ideal stack?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really will bucket them into like three main groups. One of them is like the underlying data layer. You have to have this or else you just don't understand what's going on. So like the main players right now, at least for product analytics, are like your Heap, your Mixpanel, your Amplitude. What I'm seeing though is you need more than that nowadays for a lot of product-led companies. You need some like customer data platform on top of this, and whether that's like Hull or mParticle or something like that, you just need to get a full picture of what's really going on across all these different tools. So that's kind of like layer one, base layer. Now, if you were to add another layer of tools onto your product-led company, what I would suggest is, I call this the product bumper. So how can you figure out how to guide your users faster without a ton of development time? And so whether this is like a tool like AppQueues or a tool like Pendo, I was going to say User Pilot, there's tons now.
Waltme is another great one.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's tons of ways you can guide your users and learn like what do they really need to succeed in the product. And so that's helpful because at the end of the day, like I think of user onboarding a lot like bowling. And when you think of like the first time someone plays bowling, like they're probably going to get in the gutter because they don't know the game. It's easy. It's kind of hard to throw it right down the middle and knock down all the pins. That's kind of the lure of the game too. But they want to get a strike whenever it's your first time. And so whenever it's your product, it's the same thing. Like people come to it, they want to strike out. They're often going in the gutter, but you got to bump them back into the middle of the line so that they can strike out on their own. And so that's the second kind of layer of tools. So start with the data, then move to the product bumper. And then what you can move on to is, I call it the conversational bumper. And that is really looking at, okay, when you have that data, look for like the biggest drop-off moments. If someone's in the middle of a process or something like that, maybe let's say it's Drift or Google Analytics or something like that, like they signed up, but they haven't installed the JavaScript on their website. Make it easy for them. Like send them an email with the script that they could just forward to the developer or upload to their site or something like that. Just make it stupid easy to get them back onto the straight line so they can strike out faster. And so whether you use like custom.io or even UserList, there's like tons of different email tools. You can even use traditional sales-led ones for this too. But the main thing you want to look for is just how can you pipe in that product data into this tool so it can be more smart trigger based versus just, you know, if someone signed up for the trial, they get the 7-day same 7 emails because we all know it's like, all right, this company doesn't actually like look at what I'm doing here and they're not paying attention to their users.
Yeah, that's really fun hearing you talk about that because as a PLG advocate and a technologist, you know, someone who buys and uses a lot of products, when I have to deal with a non-PLG company as a consumer, it's infuriating, totally. Right? I mean, there's no prices on the website. You can't use the product or try it out, and they gate it with like a sales executive. You have to talk to somebody in order to learn more. And it always reminds me of sort of driving to a car dealership. And as you're driving around your car looking, there's like 3 or 4 salespeople kind of chasing you, trying to get between you and the car so they can, you know, try to make a deal. I think that for technical users, we've just lost patience with products and companies like that. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, I always tell customers that, you know, when you're selling to a technologist, you have to remember that most people that are in technology roles don't have budget control. And they really have 2 accounts to pull from. They have their time and their reputation. And if they're going to take time out from their day to evaluate a product and take a look at it and maybe recommend it, they're putting both their time and their reputation on the line. So you've got to provide an experience that makes them want to be an advocate and sort of put their own, you know, their weekend time, their free time, maybe their reputation on the line. Because in these roles, I mean, it's great to have a college degree, maybe computer science with an MBA or something like that. But you kind of set that down when you get into tech because the on-ramp of learning is so significant.
Absolutely.
So talk to us about productled.com, you know, your community site. I've explored it quite a bit. Some of the people listening probably haven't. Maybe you could talk about it just for a moment and where you're going with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's evolved over the years, but one of the main things that's always been at the core of productled.com is the community. And so that's really one thing whenever you're going through this transition, whether it's from sales at a product led or you're just figuring out how to build a product led business, is a ton of questions along the way. And I know even for myself, as I was doing that, there was never like community or a place I could just go in and say like, hey, like, what do you think about this stupid idea? And I wish people would say, that's a stupid idea, Wes. You shouldn't have done that. But in my case, it wasn't. It was just like trial and error. I was like, oh, shoot, that was an expensive mistake. So, yeah, you can learn a lot faster by just like interacting with other colleagues. That's the core of the business, but we're also layering on other areas where you can have like accelerated courses and cohort-based learning and really just like figure out how to do this much faster because I truly believe like if you have a lot of different product-led companies in your same category, it's a race because they have a more efficient go-to-market model than you. So you really need to prioritize this as one of the biggest growth levers for your business.
It's really fantastic. I'm always a big fan of any movement that is helping to transition tech workers into tech entrepreneurs. And I think teaching people the business of product-led growth, and much like I do on this podcast, trying to teach people the business of venture capital and investing and understanding how growth capital works, is a big part of the challenge. And I found that when the whole company understands what you're trying to do from a go-to-market initiative perspective, and you know, your engineering team, your product team, they understand how integral the product is to what the company's success. And when everyone understands sort of how the game works, then everybody makes more money and it's a more successful endeavor. I had a Twitter follower for the show reached out to me the other day and they were asking for advice about working for consulting firms versus working for startups. And one of the people that follows the show replied and said that they'd been in 10 startups so far, you know, a few years in each one and never had a success, never made any money. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting here thinking, wow, you know, we really don't teach people how to interview an employer to be able to assess whether or not it's an opportunity as a company or it's just a job. And I hope we can teach more people about that because if I were interviewing for a product management job or entry-level sales job or even a marketing role, I would want to understand what their PLG strategy is. do they really understand it? Are they moving that direction? Who are they backed by? Are those investors usually successful? Like, all those things have a huge bearing on whether or not those stock options will ever be worth any money or not.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important to pick your job if you're recommending someone else. It is.
Yeah. Wes, if you were going to get a PLG tattoo, what would it say?
Ooh. I mean, the first thing that came to mind is like, your user is successful, your success, but that'd be pretty long.
Maybe down an arm or something like that. Yeah, I love it. You know, at SolarWinds, I had some customers get SolarWinds tattoos and send pictures in. It was always a big flattering thing. But for me, it would probably say something like, you know, it's all about the product. Because
yeah,
if you have a great product that people like using, they are going to use it. Now, whether or not you make money from it, you know, there are a lot of factors in that. But and one of the most frustrating things for me as an investor is when I find a company with a fantastic product that the users just love and a management team that just can't seem to get it together and figure out a growth strategy. And I think those are the types of companies that could gain a lot of value from joining a community like productled.com and learning more about it, because it is, you know, it's not just an evolution within the company, it's a movement. It's a way for us to say, how can we be more authentic in our goal to provide great technology for technical users to accomplish their jobs in better ways?
Yeah.
When you think about 2021 and beyond, you know, what's coming up for you?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm all in on productled.com, so like just growing that. But I think like the bigger PLG space, the one thing that gets me pretty excited is just seeing more teams use the product to grow their business. And so I'll give you an example, the one I like that I think we're going to see a lot more of. This kind of goes back to that disruptive game. And so ConvertKit, they're like this email marketing platform, doing really, really well. And then they just launched a free landing page product. And what I love about that is they don't have any intentions to monetize it one bit. It's just completely free. They're going into this like frothy space that's like, you know, it's been around for a while now, but there's a lot of enterprise players. Like, I know Unbounce is going upmarket, Instapage, same thing. All these companies are going upmarket. And then what they're going to realize is that, okay, that a lot of these disruptive players are coming in and just offering these free tools and taking that audience and now growing them into their email marketing platform. So I think a lot of SaaS companies, if you want to survive and thrive in the future, you're gonna have to figure out some of these disruptive strategies to bring people into your main product. And I think it's gonna be really spicy and interesting, whether it's through acquisitions of some of these companies and how they get there faster, or just building these products instead of like doing the old playbook that everyone knows. Like, let's write 1,000 blog posts about landing pages. They could have done that. But it's like, what is actually more helpful? Reading about a blog post or creating the landing page, or just creating a template of something that has all the best practices in there and you just plug your logo and you're good.
You know, it's great, but what I think some people misunderstand about what you just said is that in order to do what you said, you have to really understand how to provide a solution to that problem, and you'd understand the space. Okay. It's pretty easy to hire someone to write some blog posts for you, but if you're going to actually provide a free tool that provides value, you have to deeply understand the problem set. I hope that, you know, in my career, I'm able to stay down market because I love early stage companies and I love product-led growth. But I do think that there is a natural cycle of, as companies grow, they tend to move up market gradually, because, you know, the bigger you get, the bigger your revenue number commit is for the year, then the harder it is to achieve with small deals. And I think that while in some ways, if you're working at one of those companies, you know, it can feel a little odd that you join this scrappy startup that's doing a lot of PLG, and then 5 years later, it's an enterprise company selling to other enterprises. But I think that that cycle creates opportunities down market for a lot of startups. And that cycle is what keeps a lot of us going, because it's fun to work at a young company. You know, it's fun to work at an early stage company and really see things start to take off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wes, I've really enjoyed this conversation today. I'm hoping to have you back for a panel discussion soon on the evolution of product-led growth. I think we've seen some really interesting evolutions so far, and what's exciting to me is products like the ones you mentioned really didn't exist, you know, 7 years ago or so, or even five. And now they're becoming commonplace, and there's great competition in each of those segments you mentioned in the three areas of product-led growth tooling. And that competition fosters more development and rapid progress. So it's super cool. Anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I think that's pretty much it. I did actually put together, like, if you are on the fence right now, you want to like learn more about the like fundamentals of product-led growth and like if this is even right for you and some of those main benefits we were talking about, I just launched a like completely free and gated certificate on this. If you go to productledcertificate.com, I think a lot of your audience would find it helpful.
I checked it out last week, by the way. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
And it's fantastic. So for anyone out there who doesn't know Wes, you know, visit him at productled.com. And the website you just listed for the free certification program was what again?
Product-led certificate.
Productledcertificate.com. Wes, thanks so much for showing up. Hope to do this in person someday post-COVID. It's been a joy having you on the show. I'm looking forward to talking to you again soon.
Likewise. I eventually need to get to Austin.
Come down. We'll have a good time. I'll take you out.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Cheers. That's it, everyone. And thank you for joining Capital Geek. Subscribe via Apple, Stitcher, or any platform where you usually find fantastic podcasts. Tune in again soon for another great episode of Capital Geek.